Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 11, recorded Tuesday, August 16th, 2005. This is the podcast that gives you the ground-level travel rants and stories of road warriors, recorded in hotel bathrooms around the world. Our topics today are dressing for travel, a kinder, gentler TSA, and a Jeopardy-like potpourri category, bits and pieces of interesting stuff and follow-up items that I just can't get to grow up into standalone topics. Coming to you today from the bathroom of the Orchard Hotel in San Francisco, at the just a little bit off of Union Square, at the corner of Powell and Bush. It's my first time staying here. Our San Francisco office folks negotiated a good rate here in their email to the rest of the firm. They build the Orchard as a luxurious, environmentally friendly boutique hotel. Environmentally friendly, only in San Francisco. Actually, it's not a bad place. Although I'm not quite sure what's environmentally friendly about it, other than the fact that you have to do a couple of different things if you want a fresh towel. I guess you throw it on the floor if you want a fresh one, and hang it up on the rack if you want a new one. I guess that's what ranks as environmentally friendly. Anyhow, it's one of those interesting evenings in San Francisco. It's got to be about sort of 50, 55 degrees out, and again, it's the middle of August. The fog's rolling in. There's all sorts of tourists wandering around the streets in parkas. Again, a regular summer evening in San Francisco. Hey, I'm sorry I didn't get this out last week. I was in Tampa in the front part of the week, but I just didn't have enough material for a quick turnaround podcast. I was home again the back end of the week, but didn't feel like sweating it out in the mobile studio again. I also didn't like the sound of the last podcast. I tell you, the mobile studio is no substitute for the gentle reverb that comes from the bathroom tile. So I'm on one of my West Coast triangulation tours this week, Chicago to San Francisco to L.A., back to Chicago. Flew out last night, and I'll head back Thursday night. Next week, it's the Southeast triangulation through Tampa and D.C. I'll tell you, sometimes I feel a bit like a ping pong ball batted between the coasts, sort of with the Mississippi River as the net. All last week, I watched my subscription numbers as reported by the Feedburner service. I watched those subscription numbers grow. They eventually doubled over the week and continue to grow this week. It had me puzzled. I spent a bit of time on Google over the weekend trying to find out why. And, you know, did someone or some magazine, you know, was there another Wired or Business Week article on podcasting? And did someone mention the Travel Commons podcast? I couldn't find a thing. You know, coming up empty-handed, I figured I'd end up asking the question on this podcast. However, Monday afternoon, as I was packing up to head to the airport, John Burkhead sent me an email with the answer to my question. Mark, he wrote, I wanted to thank you for your podcast. I found it this week after the mention on Podfinder. I stopped putting my stuff away, fired up iTunes, and downloaded the latest episode of Podfinder. I didn't have time to listen to the whole thing, so I clicked on the chapter button, which dropped down a snazzy little vertical nav bar. And there at about the 12-minute mark was the Travel Commons logo.
Man, I could really contribute to the Travel Commons podcast. I can't count the number of times I've been bitching on my own podcast about my TSA lock getting cut and other trials and tribulations of airline security. That's for another time.
So, hey, welcome to all the new subscribers who found us through the Podfinder podcast. And thanks to Adam for featuring us. And I hope the new subscribers enjoy it and stay subscribed. You know, John Burkhead also wrote that he's working on a format and content for his own podcast. I've asked John to send along the logistics of his podcast when he's ready so that I can pass them along to you. So stay tuned there. As always, thanks to John and everyone else who've sent me notes over the past week or left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com, and the email address comments@travelcommons.com. I appreciate the feedback, and as you can tell, thanks for the content that I end up using on future podcasts.
road. Someone's gonna hurt you like you hurt me. On the road, up the road.
So today's first topic on the Travel Commons podcast, dressing for travel. You know, a couple of weeks back, I completely lost control of my travel schedule and ended up ping-ponging between the coasts a little faster than usual, flying home from LA on Tuesday and then heading out to New York the next morning. And though obvious, for some reason I was struck by how many more suits people in pinstripes and full sort of battle dress grays were on the morning New York flight. There are a lot more of those folks on the morning New York flight than on the morning flight out to L.A. Again, obvious, but for some reason it just struck me. You know, I'll tell you, the diversity of business dress codes is a real hassle, especially when you end up triangulating across a number of cities on a single run. One of my colleagues who was with me last week started in New York, spent 2 days in Tampa with me, and then ended the week in Chicago. We met at the Starbucks in the center of the main terminal at Tampa, me in my sort of Florida uniform of a dark blue polo shirt and khaki pants, her in a nicely tailored dark business suit. We walked out to the rental car in what was a typical August day in Tampa, about 92 degrees and about 92% humidity. She immediately started to fan herself. I looked at her, I said, "What were you thinking?" Pointing over to her suit. And she said, "The Chicago dress code is business formal. I didn't have room for two completely different wardrobes." And you know, there's the rub. After 9/11, we went from being able to have two carry-ons down to one. And indeed, my colleague was telling me that, what you're able to take is one carry-on bag plus a briefcase. And she was actually showing me just a little purse, a little hand purse, that she said 50% of the time she gets hassled about from the TSA folks, saying that that's actually a third bag. And literally, this thing is about the size of the palm of her hand. So, you know, we went from two carry-ons to one. And before, you know, you could carry on a hanging bag and a suitcase. I mean, I used to do two-week bunny hops through Europe carrying on a briefcase, a garment bag for my suit and shirts, and a suitcase for the rest of my clothes, including the casual stuff that I was going to use over the weekend. I'd be in a different city each day, London to Stockholm to Zurich to... Well, I tried to ditch the garment bag one trip by folding my suits, but I just couldn't get the hang of it. I think there's a real knack to that. I mean, I'd show up at meetings looking like I'd rolled down the hill to get there. You just don't see as many hanging bags anymore. You know, the battle for the carry-on space has shifted from the closets to the overhead bins. Indeed, airlines have pulled out the mid-cabin closets out of most of their planes. I rarely see that stuff anymore. And actually, most of the time now, when you look inside those closets, it's not so much you see hanging bags as much as I'm seeing, you know, big portfolios from advertising execs or, you know, the random guitar that somebody's carried on. And before you say, well, you know, just check the bags, remember that simple act adds an hour to your journey. At the front end, you got about an additional 15 to 20 minutes at the departing airport to allow for the queue in front of the TSA screening machine. And then you've got another 30 to 45 minutes at the back end waiting for your bag to arrive. I'll tell you, I'm sorry, but most of us aren't looking to make our trips any longer. Nope, I'll tell you, you got to make that one carry-on meet your needs. Well, how do you do that? I mean, we all have our own strategies. I can't speak to how women do it. I'll tell you, it's been a number of years since I've worn a dress and high heels, and I always under-accessorized. So even then, I wouldn't be the best commentator on that. But I'll tell you, most guys I know, myself included, just split the difference between business formal and business casual. You know, you wear a blazer on the plane. The dull guys go with navy blue. I try to mix it up a little bit. You pack a couple of pair of slacks, some button-down shirts, and a tie. With the jacket, you're slightly overdressed for the polo shirt and khaki crowd. Put a tie on and you're slightly underdressed for the business suit places. But, you know, most importantly, you're not sort of obnoxiously off the mark in either case. Packing light, though, does have its risks. At the start of one trip, coming back with a coffee, I tripped over a door jamb and lost my grip on the cup. Now, I'll tell you, I just should have let the thing drop on the floor and make a mess. and then apologized profusely to the janitor. But instead, I caught it before it landed. Impressive little bit of eye-hand coordination, to be sure, but I was a little off in calibrating my grip intensity. The top popped off like a cork, and in an instant, my right side was covered with a non-fat cappuccino with a single sugar. Now, the tie I can replace. The shirt, you know, I've got the spare. But the jacket, I smelled like closing time at the local Starbucks for the next 3 days. I've sworn off of anything larger than a tall ever since.
Mr. State Trooper, please don't stop me. Please don't stop me.
The second topic on today's Travel Comments podcast, a kinder and gentler TSA. Hey, could we be seeing the end of my favorite part of today's air travel experience, the shoe carnival? You know, where the TSA screener who's supposed to be evaluating your shoes for the potential to contain explosives instead is just yelling at everyone to take off their shoes or be shunted over to the side for a retaliatory pat-down or groping, whatever the case may be. Just last week, some TSA goon at Chicago Midway, which, by the way, has become, I believe, absolutely the worst TSA station of all that I've experienced, had a 5-year-old child take off her flip-flops. I mean, really, how much explosive material? I mean, well, first of all, a 5-year-old. Second, I mean, how much explosive material are you going to fit into sort of a half-inch sole that's less than 12 inches long? I mean, really, this is starting to get a little silly. Last weekend, the Washington Post reported that the new head of the TSA has asked his staff to propose screening changes, including changing the current shoe screening policy so that only passengers who set off the walk-through metal detectors or are flagged by a computer screening system, so have the dreaded quadruple S on their boarding passes, will have to remove their shoes at security checkpoints. You know, I'll tell you, in my optimistic moments, I think the TSA is slowly getting the message. So first, it changed the rules so that women are, back in December, it changed the rules so that women are no longer patted down between and under their breasts during security searches. Just some women thought that felt a little bit like a little too close to molestation. And I got to tell you, having been patted down around the waist area, it gets a little uncomfortable at times. Then it was not requiring women to remove their jackets if it meant that they'd have to walk through the metal detectors in a camisole or perhaps a bra. Again, kind of a nice compromise between public humiliation and airline security. But now look, they're talking about eliminating barefoot strolls through the security checkpoints. I don't know. It sounds like things are starting to look up. And actually, if all I saw was the Washington Post article, I would be very, very skeptical. I think actually it was a little bit more of, you know, the new TSA guy positioning himself ahead of congressional hearings in the fall, as opposed to anything more enlightened. But prior to seeing the article last week, while I was coming through Tampa Airport, I had really sort of an illuminating discussion with a TSA supervisor there. Going through the checkpoint in the Southwest terminal, the TSA screener told me to take off my shoes or face a secondary screening. You know, since I had a little bit of time, I took the secondary. And the guy doing the secondary was very nice. He was really going out of his way to be polite. And I started talking to him about the inconsistency of a shoe screening, that TSA screeners at O'Hare didn't have problems with these shoes. Indeed, other TSA screeners at Tampa, my last pass through Tampa, seemed to think they were okay too. And so, in a nice way, he flagged down his supervisor to come over and talk to me. And I appreciated that. And again, another very nice guy, and I walked him through my complaint also. But here it was, rather than sort of spouting the usual party line, this guy really sort of offered a thoughtful discussion on the topic. Now, mind you, I wasn't in a rush, and there wasn't a big queue behind me, so I think we had a little bit of time. And, you know, while not throwing his screener under the bus, and it's one of his employees, and I understand that, he's got a defender, and he said, you know, it's at their discretion, and I understood that. he did say, he said, looking at the shoes, he said, I wouldn't have pulled you aside. And he said, probably 9 times out of 10, these things would have passed without a problem also. He said that shoe screening inconsistency was absolutely the number one discussion topic in a series of meetings they've had. He said they had had earlier in the week because of really the wide dissatisfaction that it's causing. The whole issue around screen or discretion, where you've got some people really doing the job and other people just as I said at the beginning, having everybody take their shoes off. He said it's really causing them problems. And in my discussion, he intimated that there would be some easing of that shoe policy, that it sounded like someone was injecting a little bit of realism into the TSA about the actual damage that a shoe bomb could cause. I mean, you know, he and I both agreed it'd be sort of tough to take down an airplane with the amount of explosives that you could pack into a man's dress shoe, especially one with a heel less than an inch like what mine are. All that being said, I'm still a bit skeptical that there's any relief in the short term. Many of the frontline TSA supervisors and screeners have enthusiastically embraced the shoe carnival. I mean, you know, look at how many of the screeners act sort of like carny barkers, yelling at passengers to take off their shoes, you know, going through the power trip. How easy is it going to be for them to sort of back off of this position and instead do the work of actually looking down and thinking through the screening of everyone's shoes? You know, can we use 4 years of experience to convince them? I'll tell you, while Americans have been padding around in their bare and stocking feet, Europeans have been allowed to keep their shoes on. Indeed, Europeans, Asians, everybody else except Americans. Sure, there have been no shoe bombs in the U.S., but there haven't been any in Europe either ever since Richard Reed tried it. And by the way, it wasn't like he was going to really succeed. I mean, how much time have we wasted in airport lines? And how much screening effort have we misdirected toward yelling at people about their shoes as opposed to looking at, you know, taking closer looks at carry-on luggage and taking closer looks at the luggage that's going into the cargo holds? I know I'd feel a little bit safer if the TSA security efforts were focused on something other than saving me from little girls' flip-flops. The last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, hey, potpourri for 200, Alex. I got a bunch of sort of odds and ends, most of them from the Travel Commons website, that just don't sort of neatly fit into a topic, but I think are interesting nonetheless. So let me just sort of roll through a follow-up, an odds and ends, bits and bobs topic. First, following up on some topics around in-flight internet service. And that's a topic that sort of started with some postings on the Travel Commons website that I ended up, that I followed up in the last podcast. And literally the day after I posted the podcast, the Wall Street Journal had an article on the front of their second section about Boeing's connection service, their in-flight internet service that has been rolled out across a number of international carriers, not domestic U.S. yet. And the reporter said it was a great service, really good enough to support IM and Skype sessions. Great. I really hadn't thought about this, but, you know, as if that little IM ding isn't bad enough at home. And remember, I've got an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. Now, Skype. The reporter said that he ran his Skype sessions, and he said he heard the conversations fine, but that the people at the other end told him he was shouting. Great. I'll tell you, I bet if this guy was on a packed MD-80 instead of a nice, posh sort of promo flight, all the people around him would have given him some immediate feedback around his shouting. Not something I look forward to. Next, commenting on the hacking the hotel room segment from the last podcast. Remember, in that segment, I reminded everyone that when plugged into a hotel broadband internet connection, you're often unprotected from snooping guests who oftentimes are bored computer consultants with time and the tools on their hands to do a bit of damage. Kurt Taylor of the Empty Seat podcast reminded me of the new class of sort of pocket Wi-Fi routers. You know, Kurt talks about carrying a small D-Link travel router plugging it into the network jack in your hotel room, not only do you get secure wireless access so that you can check out the Travel Commons website from the comfort of your bed, but you also get the protection of a built-in firewall. Linksys and Apple also have similar products. Kurt says also that one of the side benefits is, as he said, sharing one paid hotel connection with all your traveling companions in a meeting environment. He said, we had a meeting in Seoul this week around 50 people. He said there was only one wired LAN connection and a really crappy Wi-Fi setup. He said, I used the travel router on the wired LAN and disabled the encryption so the other 50 people could get online. And then the final bit in Bob. While you're checking out the Travel Common podcast with your pocket Wi-Fi router, remember to check out the worst airport poll in the left-hand column. LAX and Denver are tied for the lead, with O'Hare and Newark tied for second place. I actually agree with these findings. I think LAX is just one of the worst airports. And I think it's not so much their fault as much as just the architecture of that airport and the decentralized, the sort of airport, airline by terminal, the multiple terminals that go around that U-shaped access drive. Just the way it was designed and the architecture of the buildings just is not conducive for the new security requirements. Indeed, as I've mentioned before on this podcast, when I've been flying Southwest out of LAX, say going up to San Jose, just the queue has come all the way out the front door. The security queue has come all the way out the front door and gone all the way to the end of the terminal canopy. And you know, I was just lucky it wasn't raining. Otherwise, I would have, you know, all of us who were standing out there would have just gotten soaked waiting to get through the TSA screening station. It's just not working. And you look at it, I don't know how you fix it. Anyhow, and Denver, I don't even want to start. Talk about bad TSA stations. Anyhow, I'm getting ready to retire this poll soon, so get your votes in now. And then also, if you have any suggestions for the topic of the next poll, send them along to me at comments@travelcommons.com, or just leave a comment on the Travel Commons website. I always take a look at that. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 11. Now the real work comes. I have to mash this all together, write the show notes, update the RSS feed, and upload the whole shebang up to the server. And that ought to be done sometime on Wednesday. So hopefully, when you guys hit your update button on iTunes or on iPod or whatever aggregator you're using, you'll see this thing stream down automagically. And I hope you enjoy it. And especially all the new subscribers, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Any comments directly to comments@travelcommons.com, so COMMENTS at travelcommons, TravelCommons.com, or the travelcommons.com website. We usually have a fun set of discussions going around, a set of topics on each of the podcasts. Or also, for those of you who'd rather, leave a comment on the comment board at podcastalley.com. I normally check that out. Anyhow, till we talk again, have safe travels. Bye now.